With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Akron Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, we discuss the three Sooners that got drafted in the NFL draft. We break down the Thunder having a commanding 3-0 lead over the Pelicans, and we give you our winners and losers of the weekend. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right, our man Michael Hostie will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Sunday, April 28th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and there's so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful, award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games, with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match, roulette, and Teddy's favorite, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And to learn more about their gaming promotions and entertainment options in the month of April, all you got to do is visit Riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Hope everyone out there is safe, man. Scary night in the state of Oklahoma. Ted, I was watching the weather, and Damon Lane basically circled exactly where your house was and said, "This is where the tornado is." And I went, "Oh no, I hope Ted is okay."
Yeah, we're good. A little bit of tree damage, just a little chainsaw work. No big deal out here, but yeah, it's close. And I don't know. It's within a year, we've had two really close calls where they've started or been within, I mean, half, quarter of a mile from our house. Pretty crazy.
It's the spring in Oklahoma, man. The tornadoes at night. I was uneasy watching the coverage, and I just hope everyone is all right out there. I saw some of the pictures from Sulphur. Oh my gosh, man, just so much damage to that town. So the one thing I do know is that this state will rally around people that lost everything last night. So I know we like to keep it light on here, but that's scary stuff, man. But I have faith in the people in this state to help out those in need. So just, it was not a fun night, man.
No.
I could only imagine how it was for you.
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking. The crazy thing is, it just kept going and going, and finally I was like, I got to go to bed, and there's still, like, tornadoes on the ground. It's wild. Crazy.
So hopefully you're all safe out there, praying for all those people that were affected by the storms last night. All right, let's get into the OU football stuff. Got to talk about the draft. Tyler Guyton, first round pick. Called it 2 years ago. Felt very vindicated. But yeah, he goes 29th overall to the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, just what a feeling that had to be for Guyton. And one thing that I loved, a lot of these guys, for whatever reason, they try to stay calm. They try to act like it's not that big of a deal. It's clearly a special moment. I loved how Guyton reacted. I loved how everyone in the room reacted. He was so excited, and He should be, because it's a really interesting landing spot for him. And I can't wait to see where they play him. I think a lot will depend on what they're going to do with Tyler Smith, who was really good at left guard for him last season. Guyton is a left tackle athlete. He is a good enough athlete to play left tackle in the National Football League. But I always thought he looked more comfortable at right tackle. I thought he just looked more natural, more fluid at the right tackle spot. And a big part of me hopes they start him at right tackle, because, Ted, when you think about an ideal situation for a rookie offensive tackle to get thrown in, when you get thrown into the fire as a rookie and you're going to have to start at tackle, starting next to Zach Martin, one of the best guards to ever play the game, is a pretty damn good situation. So I think that would be fantastic. Now, if it's Guyton and Tyler Smith on the left side of that line, watch out, man. That would be extremely fun to watch as well. But it feels like a great landing spot for Guyton. I'm thrilled for him, man.
No, you're right. And it is funny that the picture of him getting the pick where he's looking down is like, that's what it should look like. You won the lottery, right? And that's what the picture looked like. That was awesome. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Just whenever you were talking about left and right tackle, it's not the same, but at least there's some similarities playing tackle on punt team. Like, for me, I was always way more comfortable, which I'm a right-handed, right foot, playing right tackle. It syncs up better for being a right-handed person. Whenever you're playing left tackle, the steps with your right foot up and your left back, it feels weird. Does it feel that way to you?
The best way I can describe it, I think, because some people say, why is it not? Well, it's not, it can't be that hard to just flip back and forth. It is. Think of, most people are right-handed. Think of having to wipe your butt after you go to the bathroom with your left hand. That's kind of the different, like, especially for these guys that have played one side for a long, long time, the other side can feel very unnatural. Now, I'm sure Guyton's going to be fine either way, but that's kind of the best way to describe it. It just feels a little strange. You can do it. You're capable of doing it, but you need to do it quite a few times over a long period of time. You got to get the reps in, Ted. That's what it comes down to.
It feels like, as a right-handed person, playing on the right side is like the natural side, and the left side is kind of a little more unnatural to me. I could be wrong on that, but
I always felt more comfortable on the left side.
Really? Okay.
And it's strange, because if you hand me a basketball, and we are just going off the rails here, but if you hand me a basketball, like, I will dribble it initially with my left hand.
Huh.
And so I don't know if that has something to do with it. I'm right-handed, right-handed, do everything right-handed, but feel very comfortable using my left hand. So I don't know, but it's also, they started me at left guard. So it was the first pattern I established. So it felt more natural from that point on.
I think that the Cowboys, it was a great pick anyways.
Way to get us back, man. Way to go. Good. That is elite podcasting. Let's go.
I you know, it was a really deep tackle draft. But we talked about how Guyton is still, compared to a lot of these guys, like, raw to some degree. Like, he still is somewhat inexperienced. So to be able to get him in the position they did, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, a typical year where there's not like 7 or 8 first round tackles taken, he probably goes a lot higher, and they were able to even trade back and still get him at that spot. I don't know. I feel like it's a home run for the Cowboys.
Did you see what Jerry Jones said? See the quote?
Yeah.
This is a sexy pick for an offensive lineman because he's got a lot of upside. And it's true.
Yeah.
I believe when you look at the tackle class, Guyton's got the highest ceiling of every guy. Like Joe Wall is a really, really, really good player right now, but Guyton's got the highest ceiling. And it's because of some of that inexperience when it comes to playing the position. I really think his biggest focus needs to just be getting stronger.
Yeah.
They wanted to talk about his hands and his feet on the broadcast. And I'm sitting there going, I've watched every snap this guy has played probably four or five times the last couple of seasons. The number one issue is he needs to get stronger. That's it.
Hey, and this goes for pretty much every position. The stronger you get, like the more room you buy yourself is on all the technique stuff. Like if you're not strong, you have to be perfect technique. The stronger you get, the more those things can slip a little bit. I mean, obviously you'd like to be dialed in on all of it, but it'll buy him a little bit of wiggle room.
I know there's going to be some people out there that say, well, if Guyton would have come back for a year, he probably would have been a top 10 pick. I agree with that. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but it's hard to say the guy didn't make the right choice when he ends up being a first round pick and he ends up going to a really good situation like the one he's landed in Dallas. So, yeah, if he would have played one more season at Oklahoma, do I think that Bill Beedenbo would have developed him even more? And he would have been possibly, hell, he could have been a top five pick. He could have been the first tackle off the board in the 2025 draft. But there's a risk reward with all that, man. And he made his decision. He ends up going in the first round. He ends up with the Dallas Cowboys. It's hard to say he made the wrong decision, man. I think that ultimately you're a first rounder and you're on America's team. So I don't really know if he's ever going to, even if he's going to spend a single moment the rest of his life going, you know what, maybe I should have played another season of college football. I don't think that's going to cross his mind very often, if at all.
Well, and you mentioned it right out of the gate, possibly playing right next to Zach Martin. You know, that is, I mean, situations matter. And to say that if he went next year, top 10 to, I don't know, Cleveland, let's say, you know, the situation may not be the same and you may get more money, but you know, things just tend to work out differently. Hopefully this works out really well for him, turns into a really long career. Of course, I would have rather had him, you know, going into this season, but you know, this is built in to college football. When you have guys that are first round draft pick capable, rarely are they going to stay on your football team. And you know, you just have to build in that whenever they're first round ready, they're going to be gone. And that's the case here.
No doubt.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
And got to give the Cowboys some credit. Their track record of drafting offensive linemen in the first round lately is solid.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been really solid there.
But when you think about it, going all the way back to Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick,
yeah.
Zach Martin, that was my draft class. He may be the best guard to ever play. He has a legitimate argument in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then Tyler Smith.
Which is crazy. Who all was on that Notre Dame offensive line? There were several guys, weren't there?
Yeah, they had a squad. Let's not even talk about it. How dare you bring that up? But I think one thing that needs to be pointed out, Bill Beanbow, was just a couple years ago, people were saying, well, he hasn't produced any first rounders. What are you saying now, people? Back to back. I love it for Bill. And the part that a lot of people don't realize is how much better Anton Harrison and Tyler Guyton got under him. Those guys were nowhere near first rounders. And credit to those guys for putting in the work. You know, on the field, off the field, in the weight room with Schmitty, all that stuff. But getting those guys who, you know, were very raw technically, getting them to this point and for those guys to be first-round picks, like Bill Beanbow deserves a ton of credit. He doesn't deserve all the credit, right? Those guys deserve most of the credit for putting the work in. But for Beanbow to take those two guys in particular – who had the measurables, had the raw materials, if you will, and to turn them into what they became, it shows what a great football coach he is.
Well, tackle is one of, if not the most difficult positions in all of football to play, with the way the sport has changed and morphed well, they've always put, you know, the freaks out there on the edge that you've had to block, but you know, it's just become even more so. The technique involved, like you have to be massive, you have to be athletic as hell, you have to be smart, you have to be tough. It's hard to stay healthy. Like, there's a lot to it. And he's had, what, four tackles drafted in 2 years? That's number one. Like, that's impressive to get those guys to the NFL, but to get guys ready to play that quickly, that much turnover, and to be able to pump good players out like that, like, I don't know that you can say enough about how difficult that is as a coach. Meanwhile, coaching two guards and a center as well, like, that's it's really impressive what he's done. And right, you'd like to have a tackle for 3 years or 4 years, right, to be able to watch that guy develop and grow the entire time and build. And he's had to like churn them out like nothing here recently. It's been difficult,
and three of those guys are transfers.
Yeah.
You know, going back to Wanya Morris last year when he was drafted, transfer. Guyton was a transfer. Rouse, transfer. So to take those guys in from the portal and then be able to, you know, get the most out of them, it's not easy. Now, there's another side of that conversation where, hey, you need to get those types of guys out of high school. And then just imagine what Bill Beanbow could do with those types of guys. But he's a really good football coach. And it is not an accident that OU offensive linemen keep getting drafted. Speaking of which, Walter Rouse, first pick of the sixth round to the Minnesota Vikings. Ted, I'm just so happy for this guy. We only got one season of Walter and Norman, but just had he had a tremendous impact on the program. Just a fantastic guy, a pleasure to be around. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to be a great locker room guy there in Minnesota. And I thought it was interesting they announced him as a tackle, which that stuff matters. Minnesota turns in their pick. They say, hey, he's a tackle. So they're going to give him that chance at tackle initially, which I think is a great sign for him. I was really, really excited. He went a little later than I thought he might. I thought he was probably going to land in the fifth, but I think that probably was due to, you know, some of the limitations he has athletically, but still awesome to see Walter Rouse get drafted.
Yeah. I was anxious to hear what you had to say about this, because I feel like he's different than Rouse than Guyton, rather, because Guyton still, it feels like, has a a lot of upside, and maybe Rouse's, there's not a whole lot more left to squeeze out of there as far as getting better, but he's in a really good spot already. I felt like it seems late for a guy that I feel like is a plug and play almost in the NFL. It's maybe that's a little bit different, but I don't know. I feel like with as such of a solid player as he is, I don't know. I was surprised that he didn't go. I mean, I was thinking like fourth round perhaps, but I don't know. Glad he got drafted. I guess I was just a little bit surprised by that.
I think a couple things, just a really deep tackle class. Mm-hmm. So that just pushes you down the board, and you know, teams have their specific needs. And I just think that with the amount of tackles, really good tackles that were in the draft, it just got pushed down naturally. And then some NFL teams, they get drunk on potential.
Yeah.
And just what a guy can be, not exactly what he has been as a player. And I think you're right. I think people view Rouse as a guy that is what he is at this point. And I still watch him and go, I think that guy can be a really good guard in the NFL. But I'm glad he's getting his chance to tackle. And you look at the Vikings, they've got two solid tackles in Darisaw and O'Neal, but it's likely that Walter finds himself in a place where he's going to be battling to be the swing tackle, the backup at both spots. And the good thing for him is he's so intelligent. He's going to be able to pick up the system quickly, which is going to be extremely valuable for that organization. But yeah, I think it's a solid spot for him, and he maybe just went a little later because of just how talented of a tackle class it is and him not having as high of a ceiling as some of these other guys that were in this draft. But he's going to get his opportunity to possibly start for the Vikings. So we'll see what it looks like, but yeah, Could he have been a fifth rounder, maybe even a fourth rounder in a different year? Absolutely. But sometimes it's just the luck of how the board falls, man.
He's too smart. They're worried that he might say, I'm going to go be a biomedical engineer. I'll see you guys later. Like, who was the guy from the Chiefs that the Canadian guy?
Oh, yeah, the doctor.
Yeah, the doctor. Yeah. That's wild, though. I'm happy for him. I think he'll do well.
Quick story. Official meeting at the Combine with the Cincinnati Bengals. Walk in, sit down, everyone in there. It was very obvious they wanted to draft a center that year. Marvin Lewis looks at me and goes, "Hey, man, what's the dirt? Tell me what's here." He's like, "Because I'm looking at the resume. Just, it's clean. It's too clean." I was like, "Man, there's no dirt." He's like, "Well, then we can't draft you." I was like, "All right, good talk." And it was that. And I was like, "So what do you guys want to do? They're like, you want to talk about the other sitters? Like, what do we do for the rest of this?" Yeah. So we watched tapes. We watched tape of the other guys. But I told him what I thought.
Well, I had a similar deal. Jack Del Rio, he was with Jacksonville at the time. And I came in, sat down, and he was like kind of like flipping through the papers. He's like, "Have you ever been arrested?" And I was like, "No." And in my mind, I was thinking, not technically, but he's like, "No fights, no bar fights or anything." I was like, "Did he hear something? Like, is he backing me into a corner here?" And I was like, "No." He's like, "What kind of linebacker doesn't get in fights?" And I was like, "A guy that doesn't want to get suspended, you know, wants to play in every game." But it was like the same thing. Is, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know. Not rough enough. I like it. It was funny, though.
Jonah Laulu got drafted.
Yeah.
We called it, baby. Gets taken in the seventh round by the Indianapolis Colts. Did you see the clip of the phone call with Indy's GM, Chris Ballard? He calls him and basically Lalu is like, hey man, this isn't a prank call, is it? And Ballard is just cracking up. It was awesome. But just really excited for him. Trusted the coaching staff. Made the move inside to defensive tackle. Played some solid football. Didn't get invited to the combine. Had his opportunity at Pro Day to show what type of athlete he was and killed it. And I think it's just it's a great story of kind of trusting the process and making the most out of it, and ends up being a draft pick, man. What an awesome story for Laulu.
I still think that he's a guy to watch. Yeah. If he gets into the right system, I like his attitude. I like the way that he plays. You know, clearly we've talked at length about the physical traits that he brings and the position versatility. He's played edge. He can play traditional defensive end. He can slide inside and play a interior defensive tackle position. I mean, there's a lot of different things you could do with the guy. I mean, and he's got a really good personality, a really good work ethic. I mean, never know. I mean, I think there's a chance he could really carve out a nice career.
And sometimes it's really important for a rookie to land in a room with a guy that he can learn a lot from. DeForest Buckner is, when you think about the frame, and Buckner's 6'7", so he's a little taller than Laulu, but he's 6'7", 295, 300 pounds, crazy long arms. Laulu should do every single thing that guy does every single day. And just go, teach me. How could I get to as close to you as a player as possible? Because you cannot pick a better guy in the league from a physical standpoint for him to learn from. He lands in an awesome situation being in the same room as DeForest Buckner. Now, that's assuming Buckner is a cool vet, which isn't always the case.
Right.
But for him to be in a guy that is built the same way that he's built at that defensive tackle position, a guy that's done it at a very high level now for a while, mm-hmm. That's extremely valuable for Laulu, Ted.
Yeah, you see it and you know, watch some of the, because the old guys, like as they get older, and obviously Buckner's got some great skills and traits, but the longer guys are in the league, they pick up the little nuance technique things. And when he's got a similar body type, a lot of those little, because a guy that's 6'7" with really long arms, the technique is different than a guy that is, you know, 6'3", a squattier body with different, you know, the techniques differ a little bit, which works better for different body types. To see a guy that's been in the league that long with similar traits, you can pick up on some quick skills and ideas that maybe you're not going to get with the general teaching from a D-line coach.
He's going to learn with Buckner in that room. He's going to learn the things that work and the things that don't work much quicker.
Yep.
Like, hey man, you're just too tall. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. So that'll be, I think that Buckner will be an extremely valuable resource for him. Also, something interesting about the Colts roster, PJ's brother is on that roster as well. How about that?
Nice.
So a little connection there, and kind of transitioning to the guys that signed as undrafted free agents, Isaiah Coe signed with the Colts as well. So Lowe's going to get to go do all of that, all of the fun rookie stuff with Isaiah Coe, which will be, it's always nice to have a familiar face in that group.
It is. When you walk into a locker room with, you know, what is there, around 90 some guys whenever they first start off, and to not really know anyone. And there's a range of like 20 to 21 year olds all the way up to like some 30 year old guys. It's a, it can be daunting for sure. You grab onto whatever's familiar, if there is anything.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Now, looking at some of the other guys that signed as undrafted free agents, McCade Matoyer, Kansas City Chief. That is awesome. Andrew Rame signed with the Carolina Panthers. Rondell Bothroyd with the Buffalo Bills. And then Drake Stoops didn't get drafted, Ted, but lands in a very interesting situation. Signs with the LA Rams. And can't you just see Sean McVay falling in love with him?
Yeah. Yeah, I can.
Gets to learn from Cooper Kupp and Sean McVay. If there's one guy that's going to fall in love with Drake Stoops in the National Football League, I feel like it's Sean McVay. So I think it's an awesome opportunity for Drake.
Yeah. And I talked to Drake last week, and he was up at OU doing some workout stuff. And the Rams were one of the teams that he had mentioned that they had talked to about possibly signing as a free agent there. And I think it's a great opportunity. You know, I think Sean McVay's offense it's really good. He's super detailed. He's had all kinds of different body types and different types of players play for him. And I think he's one of the better guys at designing stuff for specific players that they've got. So yeah, I think it's a great opportunity for sure.
Rame's situation in Carolina is interesting as well. Clearly, I know he got to be extremely disappointed going undrafted. Not a good feeling. But the Panthers moved Austin Corbett to center. And guy's been a guard, has been a good guard. But he's also back-to-back season-ending knee injuries. So I'm sure Rame and his agent looked at that situation and went, you know what? Got a chance here. So we'll see how that ends up shaking out for Rame. And then McCade Matoyer, if he can make the Chiefs practice squad, that's a massive success with how loaded they are at the interior offensive line spots. Yeah. I mean, you think about it. They got Tooney. They got Creed. They got Trey Smith. They drafted two interior guys in the fifth and seventh round this year. So it's an uphill battle for Matoyer, but hey, at least you get the opportunity, man. Can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, and it'll be good there with a veteran team, veteran offensive line. Should be plenty of rotation in the preseason and get a chance to go up against some other teams, perform well. And, you know, that's the best spot for guys in this situation because it's basically like another round of draft stuff whenever you talk about the preseason is it's a chance to – it's like the Senior Bowl all over again. You get to perform against some other guys and hopefully, you know, catch someone's attention on you know, your film playing against the big boys. So, be a good chance.
Yeah. All right, let's get to Call Your Shot. We asked you guys your number one takeaway from OU football in the NFL draft. And this first one comes from Jim Slemaker, who says, I hope I'm saying that right. It seems S-L-E-M-A-K-E-R, Slemaker? Slemaker? I don't know. I'm sorry, Jim. He says, this will be an outlier year for OU in the NFL draft. Starting next season, OU will have 6 to 7 or more draft picks every year of the BV era.
Yeah,
that's a long pause. People are going to be going, hey, did it turn off? That seems like a long pause, Ted.
Well, I'm just trying to.
It is three draft picks for Oklahoma is not, it's not where the program needs to be. We can all agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you listen to the podcast consistently, I think we did a good job of laying out that the streak of four draft picks, however consecutive, what was it since 2008, was in serious jeopardy and that streak ended. Now, the streak of having three continues, and that's 20-something whatever years. But, yeah, I think that we all knew this was going to be a light draft class for Oklahoma football.
Yeah. 6 or 7. I was just in my head trying to do the math and think of the roster for next year.
Stutzman, Bowman. Yeah. I think Ethan Downs is a draft pick. I think that Burks will be a draft pick. Andrell Anthony, Nick Anderson, if he came out, probably a draft pick. The offensive line situation, still working through that.
Depending what happens on the defensive line, there may be one there. Yeah, it's hard because guys are also going to emerge. Like, if you have a really good season and end up playing really good football, like, who knows what happens at the end? Like, there's going to be guys that emerge that you just don't think about right now that can capitalize off that success. So I'll say this, like, I feel pretty confident that our roster makeup is, we are becoming a more talented football team, a bigger team that has more of the physical traits that you typically expect in the NFL on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, I don't know exactly what it's going to look like next year, but I think we're building in the right direction. So, and you get the benefit of playing in the SEC, like, that does matter. That does help.
It eliminates the number one thing that I think has held OU back, and that's recruits being able to go, hey, now, Coach, I want to play in the SEC.
Right.
And now there's this NIL component to everything, which just makes everything harder to predict and understand. But it is – I don't think OU's going to have three or less draft picks for a long, long time. I'd be very, very surprised. With the type of talent, with the type of length, the size and length they're bringing in, and the move to the SEC, and how good Venables and this staff are at developing guys, I would be shocked if OU had another draft class like this anytime soon, Ted.
I agree. Yeah. We'll see where it goes, but you just look at, all you have to do is compare just the defensive roster, just the measurables compared to 3 years ago, and it's totally different, and that's in the right way. So we'll see.
Yeah, and I know a lot of OU fans are probably a little annoyed with some of the other fan bases that are chirping us right now for only having three draft picks, and it is what it is, but just know that shouldn't happen again. And I'm sure that they have defended the program accordingly, saying, you know, the only reason we didn't have more than three draft picks was a lot of our best players chose not to go into the draft.
Right. Yeah.
Which is a valid argument. It is. But it also, hey, the numbers are what they are. Only had three draft picks. And I think we can all agree that cannot happen again. You got to have more talent in your program. You got to develop at a high level, all that stuff. This other one comes from Jamel Bosworth. Any relation? I don't know that. But Jamel says that hopefully we start to see some more fringe guys stay because of NIL. It's an interesting thought.
Well, I think that happened already. You know, I think in the case of definitely Stutzman, I mean, I can't say definitively on Bowman. I think it was a part of the puzzle for him, but I don't know if that was the factor. But yeah, I mean, just look at the numbers. What did we talk about the other day? The from 21, I think there was 150 underclassmen to this year. There was it 50 underclassmen, 58, something like that. The numbers have dropped way down, and NIL has to be a big factor in that. So I think that trend probably will continue. The fringe guys, the ones where people are always split, should they have gone, should they not have gone, a lot more of those guys are going to elect to stay, I guess.
I'm guessing that comment's kind of directed at Andrew Rame, where a guy that had another year of eligibility and you end up going undrafted and everyone wants to tell you, hey, you made the wrong decision. Listen, Rame he didn't test well at the combine. I don't think it's any more complicated than that. He's got better film than some guys that were drafted, that some of the centers that were drafted, but I do think you combine his injury issues, which him coming back for another season, those injury issues, the injury history doesn't go away. But all you really can do, yeah, could you prove that you can stay healthy for another entire season? Sure, but also you run the risk of adding to the list of injury issues by coming back and playing another year. And I just think that you combine the injury history he has, and then, you know, some of those testing numbers were, I'm sure, red flag numbers that took him off people's boards.
Yeah.
So yeah. I know a lot of people are kind of piling on Rame. I discourage you from doing that because the guy feels bad already. Okay. Going undrafted sucks when you expect to get drafted, believe me. And it is what it is. He made his decision. He didn't test well. He ends up going undrafted, but he lands in a situation where he's got a legitimate chance to make that football team with what their interior offensive line situation looks like. So yeah, before you pile on Andrew Rame, let's see if he makes the team or not. Okay. Yeah. Give the guy a chance. I mean, it's probably one of the tougher moments of his life. So maybe just don't shit all over the guy. Maybe just give him a second. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's right. And you know, here's the thing. Believe it or not, like where you get drafted, how high you get drafted is not the end all be all for every player. Sometimes it's just time to move on. You know, your tenure somewhere has run its course. Like, cause how long was, I know he had another year, but he's at OU for a long time.
Yeah.
He played a lot of football. It's okay if someone wants to move on and enter the next phase. There's nothing wrong with that.
You know? And I think OU has found itself in a good situation at the center spot.
Yeah.
I think Branson Hickman coming in.
Good player.
Good player. I think he was a more consistent player in 2023 than Andrew Rame. Now he doesn't have the physical measurables that Rame has, but it's going to be fine. Just wish the guy good luck and say, hey, go out there and kill it and make that squad. Just give him a little encouragement. Just a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Time to talk about how awesome the Thunder look. Let's go. But first, Love's Travel Stops is now offering a nationwide 10-cent per gallon discount on gas and auto diesel. Just download the Love's Connect app and scan your barcode at the prompt on screen and watch that price drop 10 cents per gallon. Across the country, the Love's Connect app unlocks exclusive deals and can help any traveler plan their route or meal on the highway. So before you hit the road, be sure to download the Love's Connect app to save 10 cents per gallon and experience the country's best highway hospitality at Love's Travel Stops. Love's also has you covered if you forget your phone charger or headphones with their expanded mobile to-go zone. And of course, don't forget to grab yourself some of that delicious Java Hamore.
And celebrate with a Schooner All-American Ale, the official craft beer of OU Athletics from Coop Ale Works. Named after the iconic Sooner Schooner that races across Owen Field after an OU score, you can join in on the celebration with an ice-cold beer from Coop Ale Works. You can enjoy it at the Palace on the Prairie, at OU Athletic events, at the bar, at the tailgate, and in the comfort of your own home. For more information on Schooner All-American Ale, visit schoonerale.com. Must be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Schooner All-American Ale, the taste of game day.
And we love Simple Modern. Ted, the Eichert household has gone all Simple Modern cups.
All in.
We have thrown all the others. All the competitors have been thrown in the trash. We are all in on Simple Modern. Because Simple Modern is an Oklahoma-owned drinkware company who launched the best cups it's ever made with its new signature line. Those just came out this month, and they're fantastic. They are 100% leak-proof, which is what everyone needs with an on-the-go cup. And it has a ceramic coating on the top of double-insulated stainless steel to preserve the beverage's taste while still keeping it cold and hot for hours. And even better, Simple Modern exists to give generously, donating 10% of all profits. So you can know you're helping better Oklahoma and beyond with every purchase. Check it all out at simplemodern.com today. Football Guys Talking Basketball, FGTB. Ted, Thunder blow the Pelicans out in game two. So you knew you were you're getting a desperate New Orleans Pelicans. I don't know what happens if you back an actual Pelican into a corner, but I assume it like squawks and flaps and does all kinds of crazy stuff. That's what you were getting. You were getting a Pelican backed into a corner for game three. They're in their own arena. You're going to get their best shot. And you go into their house and you whoop them up and down the floor. Smacked them around in their own house, Ted. 106-85. What a performance. That was a desperate team, and it is not easy to go into a desperate team's arena and treat them that way. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was impressive. Game one, where you saw Thunder come out, a little amped up, big environment, playoffs, maybe put a little pressure on themselves. They've settled in rather nicely since then and have calmed down and played their game. Everyone, settled back into their typical roles and performing really, really good. It's fun to watch, man.
You know who had the worst performance in that game?
Who's that?
A Pelicans crowd. Come on, guys. Empty seats everywhere. No one wearing the shirt. Like, that's what it looks like when people aren't all in. It made me so proud that the Oklahoma City crowd does it the way that we do it. I was just looking at them. I won't lie. I was judging them hard, but I don't know if this was very complicated, Ted. The Thunder just shot the hell out of the ball. Mm-hmm. 17 of 36 from three. Pelicans were 9 of 32 from three. I mean, that tells the story. But we knew at some point that teams, and this is still going to happen the rest of the playoffs, teams are going to make Dort and Giddey make shots. They're going to leave them open. They're going to let them shoot threes. And those two guys combined to go 8 of 15 from three. The Thunder are pretty much going to beat everyone in the league if that happens.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, just right. And considering the circumstances, I thought it was one of Josh Giddey's best games of his NBA career. 21-8-6 was really, really aggressive getting into the paint with the ball. I thought he played with an energy and an attitude that he absolutely needs to bring each game. Shea was solid. I wouldn't say he shot it particularly well for him, but ends up with 24 points. Jalen Williams about gave me a heart attack when he went down on the first play of the game, but it was just his face, Ted. Don't worry. It was just his face. It was just his eye. He ended up coming back in and played a really nice game, 21-9-5, and had a couple of filthy, filthy plays in that game, especially that step back three that just felt like the ultimate dagger in that game. But this young team continues to impress. And I just continue to be blown away by what Chet Holmgren does as a rim protector.
Yeah.
He only had 6 points in this game. I mean, 6 points. If you would have told me Chet only had 6 points, I'd go, probably losing game three. Mm-hmm. But other guys were hitting shots, and that dude will protect the rim at all costs. He does not care about getting dunked on at all, which is extremely valuable because it seems like he contests everything at the rim and has done a tremendous job of doing it without fouling. Mm-hmm. Just vertical. He has embraced the rule of verticality, Ted. I mean, it's just, he's so valuable to them. It's insane.
Yeah. And that mindset, it creeps in. Teams pick up on that. Guys pick up on that in the flow of a game. And oftentimes you get an initial push defensively whenever you're going to the rim. And then depending on where the game is, you may have guys just kind of open the gate on you, right? And let you go by. But when you know you're always going to get a challenge right there at the rim, that is in guys' mindset. So if you can't affect the game necessarily in the box score with scoring and points, but you still have a massive impact on what's going on. That's a sign of a good player. And it's the part that they desperately needed, and he's bringing that. And I think he's still got a ton of room to grow.
Oh, I'm absolutely with you.
As he puts weight on, because he'll naturally he'll fill in. He's going to be hell on wheels in a couple of years.
Yeah. I see his family at the games all the time. He's not going to get like bulked up. It's not going to happen with the genetics he's working with, but yeah, he's going to get stronger. I don't know how noticeable it's going to be like physically, but he's definitely going to add some strength. But I just think it says so much about him as a player that it doesn't seem, no matter what's going on for him on the offensive end, he's the same guy on the defensive end night in and night out. And I just think that speaks to a level of maturity that, you know, a lot of young players don't have, and he's got it already. And it's just, it's extremely valuable. And then you can buy him protecting the rim. Does Lu Dort does he just not get tired? I mean, his effort chasing Brandon Ingram around, chasing whoever around on the defensive end. I mean, with how thick he is and how he's built, I don't know how he's in such great shape. It's incredible.
I think it's one of those things where if you hide the appearance of being tired, the mental effect on the person you're going up against is it just grows exponentially, because it's already incredibly difficult because of how strong he is. He's way stronger than anyone, especially Ingram, who's so tall and skinny. And if you just act like you're never tired, he may never get tired. You know, it wouldn't shock me, but even if you just never act like it, it breaks the will of the other person, and you can kind of watch it happen in real time.
Yeah. I just loved it. They highlighted him several times on the TNT broadcast. Just the effort, the amount of screens that he runs around and runs through. I think he's fantastic. Would still love to see him as an edge defender, but still think he is absolutely, it seems like it would be so annoying to play against him.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be annoying, but it's also just like a physically daunting, something you think about the days leading back up into the game. You know, in the regular season, you play someone once and you're gone, right? And you're done thinking about it. But whenever he plays that physical, suffocating style of defense, and you're sitting there thinking about it for 3 days leading into the game, it's got an effect on you.
Yeah. Got Ingram's mind in a pretzel currently. Yeah. But yeah. Did you see what Charles Barkley said?
Oh, my God. That was so funny. I was cracking up.
Sorry to all the Galveston fans out there, but if you're not familiar, TNT Inside the NBA, which is maybe the best show on television, period. They always do a thing when a team is about to get swept or the series just ended. They do, you know, 1-2-3 Cancun, meaning the team is about to go to Cancun on vacation because the season is over. And Shaq asked Charles Barkley where the Pelicans were going, and he basically said they don't even deserve to go to Cancun. They have to drive to Galveston.
A dirty ass water down in Galveston.
That was, I watched it 10 times. That is what makes that show incredible. And that was, just so ridiculously funny. But he, you know, through the humor also is a great point. Like, the series feels over.
Yeah.
You don't want to take anything for granted. Sure, the Pelicans could have come out in game four and shoot the lights out from three and maybe force a game five. But that felt like just a, I don't know, the ultimate, deflating.
A glance
win.
At the watch is what that was.
Yeah. maybe some flights being booked.
Yeah. Well, I do want to ask though, like honestly, how different do you think this series would look if Zion was playing?
Extremely different. No one has any, nobody in the league has someone that can guard Zion.
Yeah.
A healthy Zion. Now, I still would pick the Thunder. I probably would have picked the Thunder in six with Zion because maybe there's one game he drops 40 and you go, hey, it is what it is. But,
and it dramatically changes the rotations too, right? Like who's guarding who and what all happens.
But make no mistake about it. There were people that thought the Pelicans were going to give the Thunder a really good series, even without Zion.
Right.
And those people look like idiots currently. I'm talking to you, Kendrick Perkins. Ridiculous. But it's just such an impressive performance up to this point from one of the youngest teams in the league. And the bottom line for me is what the Thunder is doing, it's not normal. Mm-hmm. An unproven team, no playoff experience, this young. They typically don't come out and play like this. And I know, and take the Zion piece out of it. They've come out and they were shaky in game one, but game two and game three, they have looked like the number one seed in the West.
Yeah. I would say that the way it's unfolded, because you could say, well, one of two things, would it be better for them to have faced the Pelicans at full strength and played like a grinder, really tough series to kind of get acclimated to playoff basketball, the stress, the pressure going on the road? Or is it better? And this is the side I fall on. I think it's better for them because there's pressure that comes with being the one seed, right? That's air quotes unproven, but to be able to come in, play well, maybe not get challenged as much, but get a comfort level in the playoffs, kind of get that behind you, get the pressure off by getting a first series behind you. I think all in all, it's probably the best way to go about it. And, you know, if you can get out of there in four and not expose yourself to more games and more possibility for wear and tear and injuries and stuff, that's also a big bonus as well.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that they wrap this thing up on Monday night, that it feels very sweepy. And then you can just, I mean, you can be done and wait for whoever comes out of that Mavs Clippers series, which feels like it's going to go for a while.
Yeah, they may do some damage on each other by the time this thing's over.
Yeah,
right?
Let's hope that one goes seven. But I just think that I'm trying not to overreact to them winning a series over the Pelicans without Zion, but they have dismantled that team the last two games. And it makes me wonder, like, should our expectations change?
Well, what were your expectations before?
Win the opening round series.
That was it.
And now I'm leaning heavily towards this team better be in the conference finals.
Well, things have worked out well. Like, the way everything has kind of played out so far, the way that they've played, it's worked out well for them. And, you know, if they can clean this thing up, not have anything detrimental happen, they put themselves in a really good position to do exactly that. You know, is it a guarantee? No, but I think I'd probably pick it.
I'm to the point where I welcome the next challenger.
Yeah.
Bring it on. Like if they are, I don't think anyone in that Thunder locker room is scared of the Mavericks or scared of the Clippers.
No.
I think they've gained an incredible amount of confidence over the last week, proving to themselves, hey, we can go out there and do it. It is not a group that lacks confidence anyways, but I'm to the point where it's like, hey, bring it on. Let's go. Let's see what this thing's going to look like.
Yeah, I agree. Got to get through this one, get through it clean, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may. But I like the matchups, man. When you look forward, I think at this point it would be a disappointing if they clear this series. If they didn't win the next one, it's going to be a disappointment. Like, whether or not, like, I don't know what it's going to say, the matchup says on paper, but emotionally it's going to feel like a letdown.
And there's a spectrum of disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
If they lose to the Mavs in seven, Luka drops like 50 in right. game seven. Like, okay. You know? Okay. Just hits a bunch of ridiculous shots. Yeah. Okay. But I'm leaning towards we should only lose to Denver. Like, that's where I'm starting. That's how I'm starting to feel, Ted. My confidence is growing as the team's confidence grows. Look at me. Oh,
they need to maybe bring us back down to earth a little bit with not a terrible performance, but just one to where we're just like, okay, all right, let's just maybe tap the brakes on this thing. Not get too excited.
I'm hoping the Pelicans fold like a lawn chair in game four.
I agree. I agree.
They got to drive to Galveston. Oh, my gosh.
I don't know, but they start thinking about driving to Galveston and going to that dirty-ass water on the beach. Maybe they're like, we're not going on vacation yet. Don't send us to Galveston yet.
Oh, that's one of my favorite clips in a long time.
People washing up on the beach thinking they're on vacation, dirty-ass water.
If you haven't seen the clip, go watch it. I cannot endorse it enough. All right, let's finish up with our winners. And the only thing is, there are some people that probably really love Galveston and feel personally attacked by Charles.
I know it.
Let's finish up with our winners and losers of the weekend. But first,
all you grill masters, listen up. Didier Ranch delivers premium quality beef that is 100% raised in Oklahoma right to your front door. Go to DidierRanch.com, DIDIERRanch.com to order one of their premium quality beef boxes and use promo code Oklahoma15 for 15% off your order. Filet, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, steak burgers, they've got it all, and they ship anywhere in the continental U.S., and Oklahomans can get deliveries in just 1 to 2 days. The only thing better than having a lot of premium beef on the O&D line is having premium beef delivered right to your front door. Didier Ranch, tradition tastes better.
And head to the garage for hand-smashed patties, butter-toasted buns, and some ice-cold beer. It's the perfect spot to watch any big game, and with all the garage locations being open at 10 p.m. or later every night, it's the go-to late-night spot. Visit eatatthegarage.com to find a location near you and order online from the garage in your neighborhood. As always, Ted, kick us off. Who do you have as your winner of the weekend?
I had to go with the University of Oklahoma head softball coach, Patty Gasso, 1,500 wins. That's a pretty big deal. 1,500 wins for coach. I guess the third coach to pull off such a feat. And doing so, taking the game two and the series win down at UCF. So pretty good stuff for coach. I know that's no surprise to anyone, but still, it's a huge milestone nonetheless.
When are we getting that statue? Patty's dragging her feet on the statue.
I don't know.
It was supposed to be dedicated because I was supposed to go. It was supposed to be dedicated the morning of the spring game.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the weather situation, which ended up not being a situation. I feel like Patty she wants nothing more than that statue to never see the light of day.
Well, let me ask this. Is it the right time to unveil a statue in the middle of a season? Does that put undue stress and pressure? I mean, the pressure's already there. They are who they are, right? They're
right.
the They're the top dog. Everyone's trying to bring them down. But does that just add an unnecessary level to it all?
Here's this has been my stance on the statue situation the entire time. It will continue to be my stance on the statue situation. The statue should be unveiled whenever Paddy Gasso wants it to be.
Right. Yeah.
And it should be unveiled at no other time. It's that simple for me.
If you've earned the right to have a statue, you earn the right to decide when it's unveiled.
And I know that everyone wants to have, you know, kind of a photo op moment, and it's a massive, massive deal. I mean, she's an absolute legend. You want to honor her. You want to do all that. But she is meant, not only has she meant so much to Oklahoma, like she's meant so much to the sport of softball. Reveal the statue when she wants it to. Whether that's tomorrow or that's 2 years from now, the statue's done. But whenever she wants it, that's how I feel about it. Like, I feel like she's earned that. Now, I think if she got her way, there would be no statue. And sorry, Patty, you're just not going to happen. But that's kind of how I feel about it, is unveil that thing when she wants it unveiled. Like, hasn't Paddy Gasso earned that? And maybe she just wants to get it over with. Maybe she's like, okay, let's get this over with, and then we can focus on everything that, you know, matters for finishing out the season strong.
Yeah. We should take up a collection to where we will store the statue in a pristine location, guarded from the weather, any of the it's a air conditioned space, totally comfortable, and it will stay there as long as we need it to, until she says, bring it in, and we snap it up.
Am I really about to have a Paddy Gasso statue in my living room for a couple years then?
Tie the whole living room together. It'd be great.
Just, what a statement piece.
Well, I know they're in the season has unfolded in an interesting manner, and you know, things are going to get really tough here down the stretch when this thing gets decided for the Big 12, and then they roll into the postseason. They've got some things they're working through as a team. So if you need to put it off, put the thing off. I got no problem with that.
Yeah, I am. I just think that the statue, it is what it is, but this thing's about to ramp up, man. As the NBA playoffs and the softball postseason, we're going to have to merge it all into Football Guys Talking Basketball and softball. We got to give the people what they want, man.
And baseball. Don't leave baseball out, because
what have they won? 9 in a row?
At least 8. Maybe it is 9 in a row. I went out to the game Friday against Texas. That was fun, man. That was so fun. We sat out there in the outfield, in the right field on the berm, and it was a great crowd. There was some of the best heckling of their center fielder I've ever heard. It was great, and it went on for 2.5 hours. It was fantastic.
Did you participate in said heckling?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit. It was fun.
You can chirp with the best of them.
I had a couple interesting takes out there that kind of caught on, turned into mantras throughout the rest of the night. But you know, they got a chance. They're playing too now. They didn't play yesterday because of weather, but got on them Friday night. Offense was great, pitching was great, and they're playing the doubleheader today. So we'll see if they can get that series win. It's going to be set them up really nicely to take the Big 12 regular season, which I don't think they've ever done.
Who do you have as your loser of the weekend?
I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this. The Atlanta Falcons taking Penix right after they sign Kirk Cousins to a free agent deal. They gave Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed, a contract worth $180 million, and then they used their first pick in the draft to take a quarterback, and they don't discuss it with Kirk Cousins until the night of the draft. It seems like if this was your plan, this would have been part of the conversation with Kirk Cousins all along. Whenever you, it's deceitful, in my opinion, to bring a free agent quarterback in, kind of, because he's going to a bunch of different places, right? There's not, the Falcons weren't the only place to talk to Kirk Cousins. He goes a bunch of different places. Everyone lays out their plan. And if you lay out your plan and don't mention that, oh yeah, by the way, with the first pick of this year's draft, we're going to take a quarterback. We're not going to give you a tackle. Not going to give you a number one wide receiver. You know, we're not going to, whatever. We're going to take a quarterback. I think it's deceitful to not tell your quarterback that.
His agent said that Kirk Cousins didn't know until the Falcons were on the clock and they called him and told him.
Right.
Terry Fontenot can say whatever he wants. I just think this is a bad way of operating, man. And did you see the clip of him? It looked like he was explaining why he did it to Arthur Blank there in their draft room.
How does that happen?
I don't know. And I saw some of the quotes. He basically said, Fontenot, who's the GM of the Falcons, basically said, hey, if you like a guy at the quarterback position, you have to take him, even if he's going to sit for 4 or 5 years. What? You draft quarterbacks in the first round to play, my dude. The eighth overall pick, and Kirk Cousins is aging. He's coming off the Achilles tear. But it creates the thing, as you know, Ted, I'm a big vibes guy. Mm-hmm. It creates a very awkward situation for that organization now. And they did it to themselves.
Right. And here's the thing. I won't take off the table that it may end up being a great pick. And we look back and say, oh my God, it was so smart to take a quarterback, whatever. Like, that stuff can happen. But I guess I'm shocked that Kirk Cousins wasn't told about it. And the owner, I get, like, owners aren't all football people. And your GM, hey, you run the draft, you're fine. Like, that's your specialty. You do your thing. But I think I would poke my head in a little bit and say, what are we thinking in the first round, guys, leading up to the draft? And if something like that came up, I would bet that pretty closely, I would think.
Michael Penix also, he's not young.
Yeah.
He's old and has blown out his knee, what, twice?
Yeah.
So not only you took the one guy who's probably the most ready to play now, and your plan is to have him sit until he's, what, 28 or 29 years old?
It's weird.
There are so many things that don't make sense about it. The thing that I think the number one thing that feels kind of inexcusable is that they didn't trade back.
I know. That's
where could they have gotten him? And maybe there was no one interested. Maybe no one was concerned that their guy was going to get taken there. But to just stay put and then take Penix. And I love Penix.
I do too.
But just from an organizational standpoint, a roster construction standpoint, it makes no sense. And I'm fully aware Penix could end up killing it in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. He could be great. The city could fall in love with him. He could be their starter for a long time. Let's say Cousins gets hurt. He comes in, he balls out. He's the guy. Then I guess you tried to trade Cousins and get off that contract, but they just created an extremely awkward dynamic in that locker room.
Yeah, for everyone.
For everyone.
Kirk feels is going to feel like he's in a weird spot, having to kind of defend his territory, even though they're not saying he is, but that's just natural. That's how it comes. And Penix is going to be coming in. Like, he's going to feel weird too, but at the same time, he's not going to come in and lay down and just be the guy that sits for 4 years. It just, I don't know. It's weird, man. And I like Raheem Morris. It's just, it's even more shocking for what I know of Raheem Morris to make that pick.
Everyone thought they were going to draft an edge.
Yeah.
And they drafted a quarterback that a lot of people viewed as maybe a late first rounder.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought he was going to go in the second.
There's always the quarterback that it's hard to say, is this kid a great college player or is he a great quarterback? Because there's two different things. There's some great quarterbacks in college that play, and it's just they're not set up for whatever reason to go to the NFL. And it felt like Penix was maybe that guy of this group of quarterbacks this year, you know? It's like, great in college. He's like, all the things that he's done are fantastic. Does that transfer to the NFL? And I don't know.
That, and he's old. And he's been injured.
Can't play football. He's too old.
He's too dang old. I think you could just tell by the guy's reaction on the draft coverage, everyone's mind was just blown.
No.
Including Kirk Cousins, apparently. Just signed him to that massive deal. And then
it all goes back to that for me. I believe, and I'm not ignorant to the fact that this is big business, and sometimes this is how things work. I get that. But it's still, you're starting off with your new quarterback on a deceitful move. It just changes the dynamic between the franchise and the player automatically with trust, right? You laid out your whole plan for me. You didn't ever mention taking a quarterback in the first round.
And there's a difference. There's a difference between what the Packers did with Jordan Love in the 20s.
Yep.
And picking a guy at 8.
And taking a guy in the 20s when you've had a quarterback that's been there 10 years.
Right. Who has all those relationships.
It's time to develop. We have to, at some point, start to develop your predecessor, you know?
And this is, I don't feel bad for Kirk Cousins. He's made an incredible amount of money. Seems like he's a great guy. Seems like he's got a great family. I think the QB documentary on Netflix has done wonders for him and his popularity. But let's be serious. Who do we think Atlanta fans are going to want to see? You've got this younger, exciting guy in Michael Penix who you just drafted at 8. And then you've got Captain Cole's Kirk Cousins. It's like, if Cousins struggles at all, that could get, I'm not going to say the fan base is going to turn on him, but you just created that for him.
Let me ask you this. Not that we have to spend forever on this, but do you think there was any sense from Atlanta, and they're not saying this, that Kirk's recovery is maybe not going the way that they had hoped?
That's the only thing that makes sense in my head. The quote, the Fondo's quote about sitting Penix 4 or 5 years, I read that, and I read it on Twitter, and I was like, I got to go make sure this is a real quote. That's how stupid it was.
Right.
And it was. It's real. So that would be the only thing that makes sense is 3 months from now, we find out that he had some type of setback with the Achilles or something. But you got his agent putting out statements to NFL Network. That's not good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. It's going to be, add that to the soap opera, the NFL of storylines to watch, right?
Oh, Atlanta fans are going to have a close eye, Kirk Cousins. He better not slip up, because Michael Penix seems like the type of guy that that fan base could get behind. He's exciting. He's a left-hander. Like, everyone wants to make the Michael Vick comparisons, you know, go back to the day with Vick there in Atlanta. I just feel like they just created an awful situation for their starting quarterback. It just, they did it to themselves too, man. It's
wild.
Strange. We'll see how it ends up playing out, but very strange. All right, let's get to my winner and loser. But first, attention business owners, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing in order to design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com.
And head to opolisclothing.com for our podcast merchandise and the best OU gear out there. That's opolisclothing.com, and use promo code TED, TED, for 10% off. That's opolisclothing.com. Use promo code TED for 10% off, buttery soft, and 10% off. Woo!
Look at the new trucker hats, Ted.
Damn, that is sexy.
That is a sexy hat. And a lot of people get, they want the color to be right, right? If you're going to wear it to the OU game, they want the color to be right. Check this out.
That is, it nailed disappeared. It. I can't even see it.
I, for those of you that don't watch on YouTube, I'm holding our new trucker hat from Opolis up next to my OU helmet. Identical color match. Let's go.
Not easy to do. That's awesome. Looks good.
So, yeah, there are not many left, people. So, opolisclothing.com, promo code TED. Also, promo code works in store there at Opolis. My winner of the weekend, Caleb Williams. Say whatever you want about the young man. Say whatever you want about his dad. Those two, that they had a plan. They stuck to the plan. Do whatever it takes to be the first pick of the NFL draft in 2024. And mission accomplished. Goal attained. There's, I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting path.
Like 2.5 years. He's just kind of been the guy that's been penciled into that spot. And it unfolded just like they imagined.
Yeah. I can't imagine they envisioned Lincoln leaving, like, and how all that went down, but made the tough decision, went out to USC, ends up winning a Heisman Trophy, and ends up being the number one pick in the NFL draft. And lands in what I think is about as good of a situation as you can land in. When you're getting picked number one, that means, typically, that means your team stinks. It means your team is god-awful. Bears aren't god-awful.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the Carolina Panthers. I mean, but speaking of which, what is David Tepper's problem? Did you see him take that man's hat off his head at that restaurant?
No.
Oh my gosh. Just an unbelievable clip. Let's not get sidetracked. People go find it. But I'm convinced the Panthers owner is dead set on being the most hated owner in the National Football League. It's the only thing that makes sense. Caleb goes to Chicago. And you look at the weapons he's got around him. Now they have to, they've got to make sure that the offensive line is solid, but he's got DJ Moore. They just signed Keenan Allen, who when healthy is still a really, really good player. They've got Cole Kmetta tied in, and they drafted Roma Dunze 9th overall. Guys got weapons. Their defense is kind of a middle of the pack defense in the NFL. They're not awful. I mean, it is one of the better situations we've ever seen a number one pick walk into. Mm-hmm. Maybe the best. I mean, this Caleb Williams is set up for success in Chicago. And I think we're all very interested to see how his career goes, but yeah, I mean, had a goal, accomplished that goal, and now finds himself in a pretty dang good situation with the Chicago Bears.
How's their offensive line?
They're okay. I mean, they're all right, but it is. I mean,
that's
it's a
true.
Much,
I mean,
yeah, think about what Carolina's O-line looked like last year.
Yeah, you're typically going to like a 2-15 or 1-16 type of football team that is in a really bad spot. So yeah, I mean that's big. And that division, I know Detroit has it rolling, but I mean, Minnesota's in transitional phase. Green Bay had a solid year last year, kind of under the radar. But I mean, it's not the most brutal of divisions. Like, you can find a foothold in the NFC North right now.
Yeah, they gave up 50 sacks last year. That's with Fields. That's a lot. But, you know, we'll see. I just think with what we've seen in the past for a lot of these number one overall quarterbacks, this situation for Caleb Williams is just, it's about as good as you can ask for when you're going number one.
That's right. I agree.
And one interesting thing, I don't know if you saw this, his draft phone call. It was Ryan. He talks to Ryan Poles, the GM, first, and then Eberflus, the head coach. And then I'd completely forgotten the third person he talked to, president and CEO of the Chicago Bears, former Big Ten commissioner Kevin Warren, on the phone. I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was a interesting transitional phase that Kevin Warren went into, but we'll see.
Yeah. Caleb Williams, I mean, he's walking into as good of a situation as you can ask for, being the number one overall quarterback. So, yeah, but he's my winner of the weekend because they had a plan, and say what you want about how it all went down, but they executed the plan.
They got the guy they want. The Caleb Williams and his camp got the spot that they were coveting for so long. We'll see how it works out.
Yep. My loser of the weekend. Thought about going with Spencer Rattler. Weird Spencer Rattler discourse this weekend. What was that?
I don't know.
It's like, who cares what his attitude was like in high school? That was 5 years ago. He was
or
a kid.
Was it 5 years ago? It's a long time ago.
Yeah, it seemed like a really weird draft experience for him. A bunch of chatter questioning his character and his leadership so much that like Shane Beamer fired a tweet off defending him. Like that's how bad it got. Ian Rappaport's up on the desk on NFL Network saying that teams were bothered by how he came off in the QB1 show. I was just, I don't know.
Someone
he ends up going in the fifth round.
Someone had to,
it felt like people were out to get Spencer Rattler this weekend. It was really strange to me.
That felt like a planted piece of dialogue there, you know?
I know as the draft progresses, you're looking for storylines and stuff to create interest and, you know, talking points. It is what it is, but it's just, I don't know. The guy went to South Carolina. He was voted a captain 2 years in a row by his teammates. Seemed to handle himself well, played some decent football, did not get good protection from that offensive line. My goodness.
Right.
But it seems like he did everything right, only to have the draft roll around and just get dragged through it a little bit. I don't know. It felt odd to me, Ted.
For sure. And the interesting thing about it is, I guess, it's the opposite of what we had heard NFL GMs were saying. The word was that the NFL GMs like really liked Rattler's arm, really liked what he did in that situation, you know, given the it's closer to an NFL style offense and how he operated there, even with the shortcomings that he had personnel wise. Like that was what the word was. So on draft day to hear all of a sudden that, well, GMs are having a hard time getting past how he acted as a high school kid. Whenever you see some quarterbacks acting the same way right now and getting drafted, it's weird.
It was just weird.
Yeah.
Ends up in a good situation. He's going to be in the same room as my guy, Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. One of the best dudes ever. That'll be an awesome situation for Rattler. Now, I also thought about going with the Phoenix Suns as my loser of the weekend. Now, they've got game four tonight against the Timberwolves. And maybe they win that one and it ends up being a gentleman's sweep when it goes back to Minneapolis. But anytime someone on the other team is doing the DX suck it like 10 times straight in your face, that just, you're taking an L, man. Anthony Edwards is hilarious there. And he was, what do you have, 36 in that game? I mean, he was just cooking them. But yeah, anytime, just a blatant disrespect straight in your face, and the Suns could do nothing about it.
Brutal.
That organization's in a interesting spot with the issue of that new owner. They have no moves to make. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I know that, but it's interesting. But my loser of the weekend, Denver Nuggets. What happened? The streak is over. The streak ends at 11. Nuggets finally lost to the Lakers. Now, it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. They're going to win game five in Denver. But I just wasn't going to believe it until I saw it, and we finally saw it. Credit to LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Those two guys were fantastic. LeBron was awesome in the fourth quarter. What do you have? 30 points. Anthony Davis, 25 and 23. Our guy, Austin Reeves, boomer, dropped a 21 piece. Was huge for the Lakers, but it was so weird. The Lakers were up double digits, and I was just sitting there waiting, going, okay, Denver's going to do it anytime now. And it never happened. And I think we all were surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, take it back home to Denver, get another home game, squeeze another home game out of there, get some revenue out of the thing. No Smart. Big deal. But LeBron, you know, he turned it on. If there's any doubt whether or not LeBron still has it, and maybe he doesn't have it for an entire season or maybe an entire series, but for a one game situation at 39 years old, and trust me, I hate saying this, but maybe the greatest athlete ever.
The greatest athlete ever. I've said it many times on here. People want to bring up Bo Jackson. People want to bring up Deion Sanders. No. The best athlete I think we've ever seen is LeBron James.
Yep. And to do it as long as he has is that, I mean,
it's nuts what he's doing at his age, man.
He hasn't had any serious injury.
He's had some. He hasn't had like a catastrophic, like an ACL or an Achilles or anything like that. But
it's impressive.
I just the main clip from that game is going to be him yelling at Darvin Ham to challenge one of the calls, which is so funny. But he at his size, it is just unreal what he does. I mean, I truly believe he's the best athlete we've ever seen. That being said, Jokic does one thing a game where I'm just like, wait, what was that? And he had one in this one. He's like running full speed on a fast break and just like taps the ball, just like hats it up in the air to Michael Porter Jr. for a dunk. And coming from a guy his size, some of the stuff he does, you're just like, wait, what? He is so fun to watch.
It's like, you know, whenever you watch some of the old school NBA like highlights, it's like, you would never see anything like that in today's game. It's like he's like the late 80s NBA highlight reel personified.
Oh, I absolutely adore watching him. He is what? He had 33, 14, and 14. I mean, the guy is just ridiculous. One interesting thing about this series, and I think it's over. I think we're going to get the classic gentleman sweep here, but Jamal Murray is struggling to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. And his game winner has kind of overshadowed some of the struggles, but he was 9 of 23 in this one, missed every three shot. He's in a bit of a shooting slump. And the only reason I bring it up is because I look at how he's struggling and I go, maybe the Thunder could come out of the West if Jamal Murray's struggles continue. Dort all over him. What? He's supposed to find it when Dort's running around with the ball series? I'm just saying, Ted,
Where your head's at.
I know. I'm just thinking down the line a little bit. Just thinking.
Yeah, well, think back to that 33, 14, and 14 that Jokic had. And
gosh. Guys, unbelievable. Birthday shout-outs. We only have one, and I will gift it to you.
Why are you gifting it to me?
Because that's a tough last name. And I'm interested to see what you come up with.
Happy 21st birthday to Andrew Pomosia.
That's exactly what I was going to go with. Pomosia. I think you nailed it. You look confused. Right. You look perplexed, but I think
I'm looking for an alternate pronunciation. Pomosia. I don't think there is one.
No, I think you nailed it. And on that note, episode 417 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop on Wednesday. Just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hope you all have a great start to your weekend. Also, congrats to everyone that ran the Memorial Marathon. Always an awesome event. I know the weather is not perfect, but such a tremendous accomplishment. Way to go. You can also check the podcast out on YouTube. Please subscribe, like, do all that. Tell your friends. I don't know. We just trying to continue to grow that as well. Until next time, we appreciate you all for listening. We always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other. Just one.